You're recording.
Great. Good morning, everyone. It is 8:34, and we're going to call this meeting to order on September the 20th. Please note that we have Beth Campbell from the Attorney General's office with us today. And I would just like to remind everyone to please turn off or mute your electronic devices. And I would next like to read the mission statement of the Arizona State Veterinary Board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. I would now like to ask Dr. James to do the roll call.
Dr. Byrne? Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Mr. Loheed is absent. Dr. Nosley is absent. Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson is absent. And Dr. Wright?
Here.
So please note, Dr. Wright is joining us via phone today. We have a small but mighty crew, so bear with us. And so let's go ahead and get started with Section 2, the Initial Investigative Review and Action. And we're going to number 7, 23-112, in regards to Jessica Siebel, DVM. And Tracy, if you can read the summary.
Yes, case 23-112, the complainant is Kyle Twerk, the respondent is Jessica Siebel, DVM. On January 1st, 2023, Cinnabon, a one-year-old female English bulldog, was presented to respondent on emergency due to possible dystocia. Complainant requested a cesarean section be performed as he was concerned that the dog was giving birth, and based on the breed, the dog and pups could die. Respondent stated that since the dog is actively in labor, surgery would not be recommended and advised complainant to take the dog home. She further advised complainant that no one would do surgery on the dog at this stage. Complainant stated that the dog was scheduled for a cesarean section the following morning. He did not have an area prepared for whelping and had made plans for a third party to care for the puppies. Respondent stated she was preparing an estimate for diagnostics when complainant left the premises, declining further evaluation. A short time later, the dog was presented to another emergency facility where a cesarean section was performed. Two of the four pups passed away. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1, with Ms. Bonajak opposed. And some additional information came in yesterday. A witness for the complainant, the co-owner of the dog, had provided some additional statements and evidence for your review.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like we have the respondent present today.
Yes. We have the
I know. I was like, I think
we have the complainant.
Okay, that makes more sense. Okay, if you would like to come forward,
and then Mr. Stoll is monitoring.
That makes sense. Yes. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks.
If you could state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Kyle Tour. So yeah, last time I was here, they were speaking after the statement of Dr. Seibel, and going through the process of it, they thought, reviewing the evidence, that there could be possibly a violation at hand. One of the guys said 97% of the times bulldogs do need a C-section, and another vet went as far as saying probably 99% of the time. There's been plenty of, in the video, she had told me plenty of times to take Cinnabon home, let her have a natural labor, let her push the puppies out herself, where she's in a quiet and safe space, even though she already had a treating puppy out of her, where I was there at the hospital for 30 minutes. And from what my understanding is, if you have a treating puppy like that, they need to be pulled out or taken out because they could be suffocating and die. And the reasoning that they voted for a dismissal was that because on Dr. Seibel's statements on August 1st, she claimed that she recommended Cinnabon be monitored at the hospital for 5 to 6 hours. Meanwhile, her direct statements on her notes for the puppy say the exact opposite. because there is a potential, she was worried about Cinnabon's puppies being left for diseases or whatever, maybe in the hospital that the puppies can contract and whatnot. So she recommended I take her home, and if she didn't have a puppy at my house in 5 to 6 hours to bring her back, and then they could look at a C-section then. It also seemed like she didn't, I was told she didn't have prior knowledge, much knowledge on English Bulldogs. The other doctors back there told them that they would not perform a C-section either when I asked for a recommendation. She said no one will perform one. You could try, but no one's gonna perform one. I was on the phone while she was out of the room looking for another place. And the first place I called was VCA Animal Hospital in Mesa. They said they would perform it. I had asked her even too, what happens if she has a puppy here right now in your office? And she said that would be something else called puppy care. And when I asked her for information about that, she's like, hold on, let me get some details and write up for you on how much that would cost. When she came back in, she didn't provide any of that information. And once again, recommended that I take Cinnabon home where she's in a safe, quiet place where she could push those puppies out, which as English Bulldogs, sometimes they can't even push them out. And she told me it was not an emergency at all, which when I brought her to DCA, they were shocked by that. And they were wondering why they would not even perform the C-section. And I claimed she was actively in labor. And Dr. Linus looked at me confused and he's like, that's exactly when you perform a C-section on Bulldogs. So I'm just very confused as to why the committee looked past the evidence that we have that's in videos multiple times where Dr. Seibel says to take her home. And then now her statement went past everything else. They decided to put the evidence aside, and because she said her statement on August 1st that she recommended her to be monitored at the hospital, they decided to take that word over all the evidence provided. And now I have all the evidence here to debunk that that was not true at all. So I hope you guys can look at that evidence again and see that she's multiple. It's not like it was an accident on her notes where she, it was an accident one time. She had stated multiple times to take her home. And okay. Thank you guys.
Thank you. You can step back. We do not have the respondent, but we do have Mr. Stoll here. Are you?
Monitoring providing? Only.
Okay, monitoring only. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this item.
Yes. So I did review the complaint. There are videos submitted, and then also the medical record from the complainant and the respondent. I did obviously review the IC information. I definitely have a lot of concerns about this. I have questions because there are things that were stated that didn't match. And the medical record to me very clearly matches the video. So I would like to go make the recommendation to go to informal.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to take case 23-112 to an informal. Is there any further discussion?
I mean, I agree. I have a lot more questions and concerns. But if the medical record and the video match, is there any reason to go to an informal?
The reason I would like it to go to informal is the respondent isn't here. I think that possibly I could have asked the maybe, I don't want to say simple, but the two obvious questions that I have today. But I don't have that opportunity, and I would like the respondent to have the opportunity to answer those, even if I think I know the answer from the video and the medical record. I mean, I think that
That's just what I was questioning is like if it's in the medical record and that's what we go off of, she chose not to be here, she or he.
I guess my question is how can what is said be completely opposite of what is written and what was recorded on video? I have a problem with that. To me, that's an ethics thing.
And I think if we're going down the path of potential ethics violation, then you have to ask her that.
That's what
I was
saying.
Going more along the lines of the care of the pet. So my questions were more.
No, and again, I have concerns about the care, but it bothered me very deeply on the ethical side, and I'm hoping it was a memory issue or something because it was a period of time right between when the event happened. And when there was a conversation with the committee. But if we're gonna stick, I mean, there's a big gap. And again, to me, that's ethical.
I think taking it to informals probably.
So anyways, that's my motion.
To add to that, there, although the medical record and the video match, the testimony of the respondent does not match with those two.
That's what my concern is.
Okay, so if there's no further discussion, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. For the record, please note, we now have Mr. Loheed joining us.
Was Dr. Wright a aye or a, were you a for or opposed?
Dr. Wright was an aye.
Okay.
Okay, so we are now on item number 8, 23113, in regards to Amber Schlick, CBT. Tracy, if you can read the...
Yes, case 23113, the complainant is Elizabeth Young, DBM. The respondent is Amber Schlick, CBT. On February 13th, 2023, respondent, hospital manager at Wittenberg Veterinary Clinic, called in a prescription of doxycycline at a compounding pharmacy for a co-worker's cat, Finnegan Ivins, under complainant's name. Complainant stated that respondent did not get her approval to call in the prescription. According to respondent, the cat's owner received a text message from complainant with her doxycycline dose that could be compounded. She understood this to be a request to call in the prescription to a compounding pharmacy for the pet owner. Respondent and complainant have a history of a combative relationship. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to the board to find no to dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant present, but we do have the respondent here, Amber Schlick, CBT, if you'd like to come forward. Hi, thanks for being here. Go ahead and have a seat if you could state your name for the record.
Amber Schlick.
Great. And Amber, I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Okay, I don't really have a whole lot more to say than what I've already said. I've accepted that I did call it in. I did receive the text message. There was a history of Dr. Young treating Finnegan for the upper respiratory symptoms. There is a history of combative relationship. She is no longer with the company or at my practice. And that's kind of where things are at, unless you guys have questions for me.
Okay, thank you. And so you can go ahead and step back. And let's see, oh, Ms. Frost, you're the lead on this one again.
This one's tough because we have to be directed by a veterinarian. And in this case, it was kind of third hand through a text message, which is, to me, if there hadn't been a history of there being a combative relationship, I could see where this could have gone this way. But for myself, as a CBT, I don't know if I'd want to risk it with a veterinarian that I've had a relationship with moving forward without directly speaking to that veterinarian. So this one I struggled with.
I think the way I looked at it was kind of what you're doing, which is if it had been a good relationship, you would have done it and you probably wouldn't have had an issue, which means it's not really a violation because we would have done it. It's this was a bad relationship, it was probably bad judgment, but is it really a violation?
It sucks because I could see where somebody would have done it. I wouldn't have done it without talking to the veterinarian either way. I certainly wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole if it was a veterinarian that I knew I had a contentious relationship with.
But it sounds like there was a lot of the texting happened on, you know, with frequency for this particular vet, and
yeah.
and then does it make a difference that it was doxycycline?
But it's not
like it was.
It's not a medical order if it's not written in the medical record. So
I agree with you. I think best practice would not be to do it based off of a text message, but yeah. I can totally see where this happened, and I could see it happening quite frequently actually in clinics.
I appreciate the vet. Tech has owned up to the fact that, you know,
I mean,
sounded like a miscommunication.
Yeah.
That's
with a veterinarian that you know is already not a fan.
Well, and maybe that's part of it too, is that because they didn't get along, they, you know, she didn't want to have to reach out.
Is there communication? I mean, so. I guess yes, it's hard for me to find a violation, right? Because it was filled the way it was written in the text message. So
there's anything I would lean to a letter, yeah, if anything, but yeah. Not a
but
that's why I had in my notes.
Letter of concern.
Because yeah. It was not, even if it was routine for that practice, it shouldn't be routine with any practice.
No, it's a recipe for disaster, because if it got filled and it was never documented in that medical record, then what happens? We're like, how is the cat on diabetes cycling if it never was written?
So I had in my notes, letter of concern.
Yeah. So I guess since I really couldn't tie it to a direct violation given the information, I would make a motion for a letter of concern that as a certified veterinary technician, to make sure that you're following documented orders by the veterinarian, and the place that happens is through the medical record. So that's my motion.
Okay.
Second.
Sorry, Victoria.
Madam Chair, Ms. Frost, mm-hmm. Would you mind amending your motion to say dismiss?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, dismiss, no violation, but issue a letter of concern.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to offer a letter of concern. Is there any further discussion?
And it's actually issue, not offer.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Victoria, do we have an extra working copy for Mr. Lowe? He doesn't have one.
Victoria and Tracy, it's Dr. Bright on the phone, correct?
Correct.
Yes. There seems to be a delay.
I know.
So I'm confused about when he votes. I'm confused. Dr. Wright, I'm confused about how you're voting. So if...
Yeah, we're going to have to, we're going immediately from ayes to nays, so we're going to have to just delay that slightly on your end. I have no other options for that because I can't predict the future, unfortunately.
I understand that. So on the last motion, Dr. Wright, for the, I'm sorry, this is Beth Campbell from the Attorney General's
yes.
office. On your last vote, on the last motion, were you voted, when you voted, were you voting in favor of the letter of concern or against the letter of concern?
In favor, and like I said, we just immediately went to the nays, so we need to just pause that by about 3 seconds and I'll probably take care of the issue.
Thank
but
you.
That was an aye for me.
Okay, perfect, thank you.
That was my issue on
thank
the
you.
First one too. And okay. I was like, so I'll say, all those in favor confusing. Say aye, any opposed?
Yeah, we'll just have to scroll that down.
Okay, all right, thank you. Okay, so that completes 2313. And now we are on number 9, 23114, in regards to Anna Crummins, DVM. And this is a two-pack with 23115 in regards to Emily Fassbaugh, DVM. And Tracy, you want to read the summary? I'm assuming it's the same for both.
Yeah, this is the summary. It's the same for both of these cases. Case 23114, the complainant is Savannah Rivera. The respondent is Anna Crummins, DVM. And on case 23115, the complainant is Savannah Rivera, and the respondent is Emily Fassbaugh, DVM. On December 12, 2022, Zoe, a 10-year-old female Chihuahua mix, was presented to Dr. Crummins for a dental procedure due to oral pain. The procedure was performed, extractions were conducted, and the dog was recovered. The extractions were not documented in the medical record, and Dr. Crummins could not recall which teeth were extracted. Complainant stated that the dog continued to be in pain. On January 6, 2023, the dog was seen by Dr. Browning, who noted root exposure on two teeth and recommended having the dog reevaluated with possible extractions. On January 17, 2023, the dog was presented to Dr. Fassbaugh for a second dental surgery. On January 27, 2023, the dog was seen by Dr. Fassbaugh for continued pain. Dr. Fassbaugh could not identify the source of the dog's pain. Anal glands were considered and expressed. Complainant was instructed to continue the antibiotics and follow up in 2 weeks if no improvement. On February 20, 2023, the dog was presented to the Pet Dental Clinic for evaluation. Dr. Huchert felt there was some type of oral discomfort but could not identify a cause from the dental radiographs provided. He was concerned that he may not be able to diagnose the dog's issue and referred complainant to a board-certified dental specialist. So in case 23114 for Dr. Crimmins, the committee recommended a potential violation. And it was moved by Dr. Dow and seconded by Dr. Rye that the board find ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to R311-502L5 for failure to document the tentative or definitive diagnosis with respect to the condition of the dog's mouth on December 12th of 2022, and L6 for failure to document the treatment that was provided to the dog with respect to the teeth that were extracted. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And in case 23115 for Dr. Fassbaum, the committee concluded that no possible violation had occurred and recommended, it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And that was moved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. So we have no complainant present. We have both vets and their attorneys. So we're gonna start with Dr. Anna Crummins first. Your attorney would like to come forward. Thanks for being here. You both state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Leanne Hay, on behalf of Dr. Crummins, who is here as well. This case involves dental extractions performed on a 10-year-old female Chihuahua with a history of dental disease and lingual ulcers. She was a regular patient at Banfield, where Dr. Crewman sometimes worked as a locum tenens. On December 12th of 2022, the Chihuahua was brought in for anesthetized comprehensive oral health assessment and treatment. Pre-surgical blood work indicated hyperglobulinemia and hyperproteinemia consistent with periodontal disease. The pet was premedicated, induced, and had radiographs taken, and the procedure was initiated. The techs performed scaling, polishing, monitoring of anesthesia, and charting for the veterinarian. Lidocaine injections were given for local anesthesia, and the extractions began, which were determined based on the pet's presentation. And extractions were completed on teeth number 109, 405, and 410. Sectioning was not required due to the level of root exposure and lack of ligament attachment present on the teeth. At the conclusion, suturing was attempted but would not hold. During the procedure, some additional teeth also fell out, numbers 110, 210, and 310. The procedure concluded without complication and the patient recovered uneventfully, and Dr. Crewman's was not involved thereafter. The investigative committee did not have any clinical concerns, but did have some concerns regarding documentation. Their first concern was the lack of diagnosis of the dog's condition. The chart does list a tentative diagnosis of dental calculus, and we do respectfully disagree that each tooth needed an individual diagnosis documented, and so we believe the documentation in that regard was appropriate. The investigative committee's main concern was the failure to document which teeth were specifically extracted on a tooth chart. We understand the board and the committee's position on this point. It is Dr. Crewman's practice to call out the perio depths and the tooth numbers of teeth while she is probing them, as well as during extractions, which is what she did here. She reasonably believed that the tech was charting what she was dictating. However, she does recognize that charting is ultimately her responsibility, and that for whatever reason that it was not done here. For that reason, recognizing her responsibility for charting, she does normally review paper charts in between patients. On this day, she was unusually busy and the clinic was understaffed, so she didn't have the chance to do so. She does also have to leave the clinic at a specific time due to her child's daycare situation, so she was not able to stay afterwards. She did not realize that charting was incomplete until it was reviewed for this case. The investigative committee had some concerns why no addendum was done at the point that she realized the charting was incomplete. Upon receiving the complaint and receiving and seeing that the charting was incomplete, she considered doing an addendum, but was concerned about the appearance of impropriety. And frankly, I will tell you that it's my practice, as well as all of my partners' practices, to advise against addending records in all board cases and all litigation. It does it does raise certain questions and call things into question. So regardless, we do understand the committee's concern about that, and so we have a corrected record that Dr. Crummins has prepared. to addend to the record with the teeth information, but because the patient is not active in Banfield anymore, she's not able to do the addendum now. She is prepared to send the addendum to Dr. Fasbaugh to have her update it in the chart. And we believe that Dr. Fasbaugh is aware of the addendum and is happy to put it in the chart. However, out of a concern for this ongoing investigation and any appearance of impropriety, it has not been finalized until now, but it is ready to go, and I have it, a copy of it, if the board would like to see it. Since this case, I do want to highlight that Dr. Primmons has changed the type of cases that she takes at Banfield to ensure that she has the flow desired, to make sure that she is checking documentation afterwards and has the time necessary for that. In retrospect, she does wish that she would have slowed down more that day and ensured that proper documentation had been done. And it is certainly a mistake that she won't make again. And so, again, we do understand the board's concern regarding the documentation. And it is Dr. Crewman's normal practice to do what this board believes is appropriate. Because this was just an inadvertent oversight, we request dismissal with a letter of concern for the documentation. We believe this is appropriate because continuing education would not have prevented the documentation, given Dr. Cummins readily admits the issues. She was already aware of these obligations and just frankly had an unusual day. And also she has already taken steps to ensure that appropriate documentation does occur going forward. So we do request dismissal with a letter of concern, and we are available for questions or if you would like to see the addendum. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both.
Can I have one quick, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Just one.
Yeah.
Somewhere in this communication stuff that was submitted, there was a statement that you couldn't remember which teeth were extracted. So how do we now have a record that clarifies which teeth were extracted?
That was based on review, once Banfield was able to retrieve the radiographs and looking at the previous charting and then the charting by Fasbaugh.
Follow-up question. So you did radiographs before and after?
Yes, typically I do radiographs before and then after for the extraction sites. Okay. And those are performed by the technicians and then reviewed by the doctor.
Okay. Dr. Wright?
Yes.
Okay. So you are the lead. We do not have the complainant present. I
don't
know if you had any other questions before I let them step back, and then you probably want to, did you want to vote on this one before we take number 23-115?
Yeah, I think I want to do this one separate from 23-115. I don't have any particular questions right now. It's kind of my discussion is straightforward around the records and stuff. So if anybody else has any questions, we can go over that.
Nope, go right ahead, Mr. Wright, or Dr. Wright, sorry.
Okay, so thank you. So yeah, we'll discuss this right now. So going through, looking at everything, and looking at the records, we do have on the normal or not selected findings, where we do have something that says tartar on teeth found. I mean, is that a diagnosis or is that not a diagnosis? I mean, it's definitely documented. It's kind of more in the objective kind of findings area. But I mean, it is documented there. Diagnosis, what does that, we know what that truly means, but what does that mean on a medical record? So I guess I would like some discussion around that if anybody thinks that there's not a diagnosis here, because I mean, it is addressed. And I mean, tartar on teeth is kind of a diagnosis too. It's just, is it in the right section or not? So is that more of a semantic thing? I mean, what are people's thoughts on there? Because that's kind of more of a, yeah, maybe it can be more clear to me, but I'd like to have their thoughts on that. Or if anybody really has any thoughts on that.
I would agree with, I think it's better to have it in the right section, but I'm not here to monitor which section of the medical records you're in. I mean, you've seen some of the medical records we get, so I'm just happy that there was something documented. But what I would say is, what dental tartar to me does not necessarily indicate that we're going to be extracting teeth. There's another issue that's causing us to extract teeth, which I don't see documented anywhere. And I certainly understand this, how that happened, because she didn't know that until she got into the dental. And then the stuff that she was doing during the dental didn't get transferred into the medical record, right? So what she knew going into the dental was documented, what happened during the dental was not documented, which is probably part of the actual diagnosis.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. I agree with you there. And I mean, again, tartar on teeth, I always tell clients, I can point to tartar and say, hey, that's gross, we need to do a dental, but that's not truly the problem. It's the periodontal disease, the loss of the periodontal ligament, that kind of stuff. And it does say in here, swelling, inflammation of gums. Again, are we grading that or anything? No, it's not a 1, 2, 3, or 4. And again, that could be more clear. And I would hope kind of moving forward, we would understand that probably shouldn't saying that more, but at least it's addressed. That's my big thing. I mean, in this regard, for that specific issue, like I said, at the most I was thinking letter of concern, but I think even more just the conversation may be enough on that, because it is there. Yeah, it could be more clear. Yeah, it could be better, but swelling and inflammation could lead to extraction. So I'm kind of like, yeah, it could be better on there. But again, like you said, we've seen a lot of records that really could be better. So at least this is addressed. But again, I mean, are you thinking like letter of concern on that portion? Like I said, separate from the actual documentation of teeth at this point, or is that kind of like a do better?
Yeah, I'm saying it as do better.
Yeah, that's me. Okay, so so the failure to document the tentative diagnosis, definitive diagnosis. I think it, again, it could be more clear, but it's not there. All right, but there is something there. My bigger concern is that, we didn't document the extraction of the teeth. I'm not really satisfied with the scheduling excuse or reasoning for that. Unfortunately, medicine is medicine is medicine. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It never will be. And obligations outside do not mean that we can kind of take shortcuts on the health of our patients. So the fact that we didn't document this because we didn't have time, okay, I understand that. But again, going back to the addendum, addendums are fine, in my opinion. Addendums are great. I use them. They should be there. But after the records are requested, it's kind of a little too late to addendize something. Records, in my opinion, we have, 10 days by statute to release records outside of an emergency, if I remember correctly. I gotta look back at that statute. So like I said, any kind of documentation changes in those 10 days, I kind of look at as addendums and we're good. So like I said, if this was not something we could do that day, we should be able to do it later. The fact that we're kind of doing locum and we're not there the next day and all that, again, that's outside of my consideration. This is something that has to be done as a statute. So I do have concerns around the non-documentation of the teeth. Again, if anybody has any thoughts on that.
So on the addendums, I took a totally different approach. I think as long as what was originally there is still there.
And not changed.
Yes. As long as the original isn't changed. I mean, you could even strike through it as long as you can still read it, right?
Yeah.
But put it in there, but put the date that you did the whatever amendment you put in there or edit and the reason why you did that. And then it's fine. And it doesn't matter
what
you did, and you can do it anytime. Anytime you come across something, say, oh, that's not right, fix it.
But after you get a board complaint, doesn't that seem
even then, as long as you got the date, we can see that you did it after you got the complaint. Oh, look, I did screw that up. And I fixed it. As long as we could still see what the original was,
right. Okay,
and you had the date you made the change and why you did it, I would encourage it to be done.
I mean, it is nice that we go back and get that done, but like I said, when we're looking at actual statutes, like I said, after the fact is kind of a little more of a concern for me. Like I said, When it's especially if the reasoning for not getting it done is, oh, I had to leave because I had other things going on. Okay, cool. It's cognizant in your mind that you need to finish this, and that's not really what I'm seeing here either. So I agree with you. I mean, updating records and dating it is awesome, and I think that's a very handy thing. But like I said, this is kind of well after the fact, and I have concerns that it never would have been done if it was never caught type thing too.
Okay. All right. Well, what are you thinking, Dr. Wright?
So at this point, unless there's any other discussion, I can make a motion. So I make a motion to find a violation of ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to AACR 311-502L, number 6, failure to document the treatment that was provided to the dog with respect to the teeth that were extracted.
Okay,
So we have a motion for a violation.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. So that concludes 23-14.
Are you going to offer a consent agreement?
Oh, sorry.
Geez, I didn't have that part ready. I'm sorry. Can we do that next month, or do you want me to just work through one right now?
Well,
I mean, it's either way.
No, we don't have to do it.
I think it's appropriate to do, Dr. Wright, this that to off based upon your finding of violation to offer a consent agreement. You do have options for.
Okay.
Consent agreement for a decree of censure, probation, civil penalty, as well as some continuing education.
Yeah, I'd be more looking at like records keeping violations at that point. But what are your thoughts, or anybody else's thoughts?
Dr. Wright, this is Robin. I don't actually. I kind of agree with their statement that I don't know that any. CE is going to change it because this was not a lack of knowledge issue. This was a, I didn't go back and look and make sure my records were documented. So, I mean, I would offer a consent agreement that there's a violation, and I don't even know, unless there's any priors or something that we need to think about, I don't know that I would even require any CE.
There's no priors.
I mean, I see the point there, but again, everything's kind of being argued after the fact. And like I said, we left, we didn't do our medical records as according to statute. So do we truly know the statutes? I mean, I don't know. And yeah, everybody can kind of make the comment of, well, we fixed it, we know what's going on, so I don't think we need to do anything. It's like, well, everybody thinks they know what's going on in medical records, and obviously we don't here. I mean, I understand what you're saying too, but I'm kind of, I mean, does anybody else thoughts? Because like I said, I was thinking no civil penalty and doing CE, but there needs to be something here. So if we're not doing CE, then I'm thinking civil penalty.
Right. I would lean towards, three hours of CE or something.
Yeah. Because I mean, yeah, because like I said, I don't think there's a financial issue going on here that we need to really say, okay, you need to do this. It's just, hey, go find some continuing education and get that done on medical records. Because again, it's always good to have a refresher on what you truly need and what in medical records. And it seems like, again, we've all seen records that are problematic that come in front of us. So it's we see problems here. Why do we do medical records, CD in other cases and not this one? Everybody says they know what's going on after the fact, but obviously we didn't during the fact. So I was thinking just more 3 hours of CE and medical records.
Okay.
Is that your motion?
Do we have to do the findings of fact and conclusion of law at this point?
Yes.
For the consent agreement?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I make a motion that our findings of fact are the findings of fact in the committee report, and our conclusions of law are as done as the excluding that number 5.
Second.
Okay, sorry. A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Okay, so I make a motion to order, thank you, that's what I'm looking for. I make a motion to order 3 hours of education and medical records to be completed within a year. And you gotta put the license on probation for that year, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So a motion to do 3 hours of continuing education and medical records to be completed in a year, the license on probation with the suspended.
Okay.
Second. Is that right?
And if not signed in 30 days, move that to informal?
Yeah, if not signed within 30 days, move to a informal.
Okay, and this is Beth, I have one more question, and this just might be presumed in the consent, and I'm sorry, I'm new here. Once she completes the continuing, if she completes it in less than a year, can she notify board staff and then
yes, it'll be placed on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
Okay.
No, you're good. It's a good question.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call on that one. right, since it's a consent. Ms. Greer?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that one, that does now conclude 23-114. So now we are on to, number 10, 23-115, in regards to Emily Fassbaugh, DVM. We've already heard the case summary, and Dr. Fassbaugh and her attorney are present. So if you would like to come forward. Morning. Thanks for being here. And if you'll state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Corey Tishka on behalf of Emily Fassbaugh, DVM, who's here to my right. As the investigative committee had concluded, no violation occurred here. Dr. Fassbaugh met the standard of care in the treatment of the dog. She performed her own assessment, ordered her own set of radiographs, and properly labeled them. She performed the dental procedure, examining the teeth and extracting the additional teeth that needed to be extracted, leaving the others that appeared healthy. She made efforts to ensure that the owner paid only for the actual extractions and not the exam, anesthesia, or repeat radiographs. When the dog returned with continued pain, Dr. Fassbaugh appropriately considered all the evidence in assessing the source of the dog's continued discomfort. The extraction sites appeared to be well healed, the gums were quiet, the dog was not tender to palpation of the mouth, and so she reviewed the owner had a video of the dog, so she reviewed that, and she listened to the owner's observation that the dog had been scooting. So she expressed the anal glands and found signs of infection. She ordered antibiotics to be continued and a recheck in 2 weeks with a plan to refer to dental specialist if the dog's pain was not improved by that time. So Dr. Fassbaugh's documentation of her care of the dog, her decision-making process, and her communication with the owner was all appropriate, and Dr. Fassbaugh met the standard of care in all respects. She also met her responsibility with respect to the oversight of Dr. Krumans. When she was unable to determine by the records exactly what Dr. Krumans did at the original dental procedure, she asked Dr. Krumans for her recollections. And then she spoke to Dr. Krumans about the charting and the need to be more complete. She also spoke to her practice manager to ensure that Dr. Krumans would be scheduled only for roomed patients and not for dentals or other procedures. Dr. Fassbaugh believed this to be a sufficient remedy because she knew Dr. Krumans to normally be a good and responsive veterinarian. Her prior chart reviews were appropriate, and Dr. Krumans assured her that she would improve her charting going forward. Dr. Fassbaugh did not believe an addendum was necessary or appropriate at that time. First, her priority was treating the patient's ongoing concerns. She didn't believe it was appropriate because Dr. Krumans did not have a recollection of what she actually did, so how could she create an addendum at that time? She also felt it was not necessary because Dr. Fassbaugh's subsequent radiographs, exam under anesthesia, dental procedure, and documentation of that filled in the gaps and furthered the record with information about the new extractions. So all the relevant information was in the chart at that point for purposes of continuity of care. Dr. Fassbaugh has reviewed Dr. Krumman's proposed addendum and has no issue adding it to the chart, but agrees that it needs to be done with the board's approval so as not to interfere with the board proceeding. So for these reasons, Dr. Fassbaugh met her responsibility with respect to the oversight of Dr. Krumman's. The investigative committee raised some questions about the telehealth program. That is outside the scope of Dr. Fassbaugh's role as a supervisor, so she answered the committee's questions the best she could, but she should not be held responsible for any concerns the board may have about that process. And so for these reasons, the board should find that Dr. Fassbaugh did not violate the Veterinarian Practice Act, and the board should dismiss the complaint against her without further action. Thank you.
Okay, thank you both. If there's no questions, you may both step back. And Dr. Wright, you are the lead, obviously, on this one as well.
Yes, thank you. Again, after going through and reading this, I do agree that Dr. Fassbaugh handled this. Again, we can all have opinions on how things are handled in different ways, but I think this is handled appropriately, and I don't see any issues with the way that Dr. Fassbaugh did this. Since the telemedicine thing was raised in the presentation right there in the speech, I would like to use that opportunity, unfortunately, under her case to voice my frustration with the telemedicine issues that we have. Again, that is, I agree that is in no relation to Dr. Fassbaugh, but since that was brought up, I think that is something I want on the record, that I am frustrated with the way telemedicine is handled also. But beyond that, I would like to make a motion to dismiss this case with no violation.
Okay. Well, motion, is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to dismiss case 23-115. There's no further discussion.
So okay. I did, Madam Chair,
yeah.
I did have my notes dismissed, but with a letter of concern.
Okay.
Because I have to disagree that the addendum should have been done.
Okay.
And just like I stated in the previous case, you leave the original and you put why, when, and why you put the addendum in there, but you do it.
Okay.
And you get it done.
I would have felt that too, except for the fact that the documentation at that point in time was that she had no recollection of what had been done. She could not recall anything, so there was nothing to really put on an addendum until she went back and then looked at the x-rays and looked at everything. Which,
yeah, but she could have told her to do that.
She could have, but I think she ended up doing that, so there wasn't anything yeah. additional to put in there that she wasn't already going to have to do just to keep the care going. So that's why I was like, okay, I get that, because if a doctor yeah. says to you, I can't recall anything, what are you going to write? I can't recall anything. I mean, it just, there's nothing
well,
really
that. No, and I wouldn't ask her to put that in. But even if they couldn't recall, she did know that she did extractions, and it wasn't even in the record that extractions were done.
Right.
That could have been done, and that could have been, and the addendum is, I did the extractions. The technician failed to document what I was saying out loud as I was doing it. And that would be the first addendum. And the next addendum would be later on when she came up, okay, I figured out how I can do this. I can look at the before and after radiographs and I can figure it out.
But I think
so there could be two addendums.
Yeah, and I think we just also have a lot of miscommunication on whether to use addendums at all, right? Like, we have some people who believe you shouldn't do them at all, and we don't have anything that references that in statute on how to do an addendum and when you can use it and when you can't. That is required. It is in there?
Yeah.
Does it say that you have to do it if you have changes to your medical, like, how does it?
It says L3 says date. Veterinary service and what you're supposed to provide in the medical record. It says date of veterinary services and date a written entry is made to the medical record. If the entry is made on a date other than when the veterinary medical services were provided.
Yeah, but that doesn't say that if you find out you missed something, you have to document it at that point. You missed it. She's owning that she missed it. She's not saying she didn't miss it. So I don't think we should hold the overseeing vet responsible for
it's only a letter
not
of
writing
concern,
an
so
addendum.
No holding responsible, really, except
okay.
putting it out there.
Ms. Sullivan, did you have anything further to add?
Yes, a question of staff, excuse me, regarding telemedicine regulation. Can veterinarians or CVTs who are not licensed or certificated in Arizona provide telemedicine in the state of Arizona?
So, Ms. Solomon, I think what we need to do, that's a big question, right, and a must, and it may be worthy of discussion. For the purposes of Dr. Fassbaugh's case, though, I think that that's what we really need to focus on now.
She is the responsible, or Dr. Fassbaugh is the responsible veterinarian for the clinic. Right? We don't regulate corporations. We can only regulate veterinarians and CVTs, so the only regulation we would have if that is some sort of a violation or area of concern would be with responsible vet, if I understand correct.
I mean, isn't she just picking up the phone and calling kind of the corp, I mean, 1-800
that's not her premise.
Telemed?
So.
Yeah.
The whole thing,
so
they weren't on her premise, so it's unrelated.
Yeah.
But don't worry, that's next, but right after we finish this.
Okay.
So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 23-115 with no violation, and assuming Dr. Wright does not wish to change that, let's go ahead and vote. Okay. Let's go ahead and vote on that. So all those in favor of dismissing this case, say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed?
Nay.
Okay. So we have one nay. Okay. So the motion passes. Case number 23-115 is dismissed.
Madam Chair, before we move on to the next case, I would make a motion that we direct staff to refer the unlicensed practitioners at the Banfield Telehealth Veterinarians to the Attorney General's Office and the Maricopa County Attorney. To be Dr. Caleb Palmer, Dr. Lindsay Davis, Dr. Nicole Miller, and Dr. Geneva Paglia, because none of them are licensed in the state of Arizona. So whether it's any kind of practice, telemedicine or not, they can't practice in Arizona without an Arizona license. And where the animal is where they have to be licensed.
So in looking through the communication of what the televets were recommending, they didn't prescribe anything, they didn't diagnose anything. They were basically doing what a technician or receptionist at any clinic in the state of Arizona could do. So unless you guys saw something different that shows that they were actually practicing medicine, I don't know why this is even up for discussion. I mean, if you have a client
personally
and a technician says, oh, you know, sometimes after anesthesia, the dog can be groggy, just go ahead and wait a few hours. If you still have an issue, call back. They're not practicing medicine, and that's what was being done here. I didn't see any, I didn't look at it, I'll say. I mean, there could be something that I missed, but I just didn't see anything. In the ones that I looked through, I didn't see anything.
Personally, and this is Dr. Wright on the phone, I can't see how a veterinarian can talk to anybody about their pet without making some sort of diagnosis about what's actually happening and what they're talking about. That's my big problem with telemedicine, is there always has to be a diagnosis. Otherwise, how are you offering any kind of advice?
Well, and I would put on top of that, even before you get to that step, the first step is establishing the veterinary client-patient relationship.
We do this every day in practice.
I know, and we just passed a law this last session that we can do that via telemedicine. But they're not licensed in Arizona to do that, so they cannot do that.
But that's what I'm saying, is I don't think they're practicing medicine. I think they're doing exactly what receptionists and technicians do in practices every day.
Then they should let the receptionist
and technician do that. Which is look at the medical record that was already done, and look at what was said, and provide guidance on whether they need to come in or not.
Then that's who should answer the phone.
You're saying, but receptionists and technicians are doing it under the purview of a premise license and a licensed veterinarian. They're not just making advice, and I don't know of anybody that's making advice on non-clients. If you have a client that calls in and says something, I think it's inappropriate for a technician to make a comment. If you don't have a relationship with that one, then that technician or receptionist should not make a comment on
it. Right, but these
so there
clients.
Is no, there is already an established VCPR in your example, in my opinion.
But okay. Yeah, I mean, I think there is a VCPR because they were already clients.
So it's different than telemedicine. Yeah.
I think that the thing here is that the people answering the questions happen to also be veterinarians, and that's what's causing the grief.
But not licensed veterinarians.
Banfield technician at the corporate office answering phone calls and triaging cases. Okay. I don't think we'd be having this discussion.
So, Madam Chair, instead of
well, that's what the Attorney General
figured
out.
Refer it
okay.
And let the experts in the law take care of it.
So, Victoria, is that?
So I would just say it seems like the crux of the argument is that there's disagreement on what's the practice of veterinary medicine when we actually do have a statute that actually defines what the acts that constitute the practice of veterinary medicine. So if the board all agrees that what they perceive happened fit into ARS 32-2231, then it may be appropriate to refer.
Is this something we need to take a vote on, or are we...
Well,
directing.
It sounds like there's been a motion to refer it to the Attorney General's office. I haven't heard a second.
Second.
And Ms. Solomon has seconded it, so if that is what you guys want to do, you'd have to vote on it.
So can I ask, would we need to investigate that first, open a case?
No, you just write the letter.
Okay, so, and then once we've made this motion, Ms. Campbell, and it goes off, are we doing anything beyond that?
No, they're not licensed here, so we don't have any
licenses.
Okay, I just didn't know if we were checking back. Okay, all right, well, we have a motion and a second to refer these three individual vets to the Attorney General's office.
Four.
If there's no further discussion, hopefully. Then all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Sorry. All those in favor say aye again, please.
Aye.
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 Those that are opposed.
Aye.
Okay. So we have one opposed. Okay. Thank you.